Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview people who are making a difference in the world. We're going to explore many different aspects and areas of life, including business, physical, spiritual, mental, sales, relationships, disabilities, and many, many more important topics. My name is Tom Tutall Cunningham, and I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor. I'm also a regular contributor to their weekly newsletter, and I recently spoke at the 2012 Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia, where I shared the stage with Deepak Chopra, who was the keynote speaker for the event. I've had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since age 5. That's 44 years now, and I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced and been hospitalized about 40 times. I also stand about 5'2" due to the heavy daily doses of the oral steroid prednisone that I had to take for my arthritis. I'm also a senior research director for the Canadian Business Journal, which is a digital-only publication that is the official and only media partner with the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. You can find out more about me at my website. It's tall.com. My guest today is a great friend of mine, Michael Wilkie. Michael, I met him a few years ago when both of us took our Napoleon Hill Foundation Leadership Certification course. We met in Ireland as the final part of the course. And Michael is acknowledged as one of Southern New Hampshire's premier personal trainers. He has owned and operated Fit for Life Personal Training for more than 12 years, and his primary office is located in Nashua, New Hampshire, where he has educated hundreds of clients on the benefits of proper exercise and nutrition. Michael holds an associate degree in small business management and entrepreneurship from Hesser College and has a bachelor's degree in business administration from River College. Along with his business education, he's also certified as a personal trainer through AFAA, which is the Aerobics and Fitness Association of America, and he is working towards his next certification through ISSA, the International Sports Sciences Association. Combined with the personal training certification, Michael holds many other certifications such as nutrition technician and a weight room specialist, just to name a few. Michael's been featured in the Nashua Telegraph and has had a couple of articles written about him, the first regarding a senior citizen he trained for quite some time and helped her prevent osteoporosis from taking over her body. The other article written was regarding his expertise in proper warm-up techniques of the rotator cuff and the proper training techniques of the subsequent shoulder workout after that. Michael has also written articles for various publications such as Varsity Magazine, the Napoleon Hill Foundation, and Natural Bodybuilding and Fitness. Michael has also reached out to the younger population in his community by giving lectures about exercise and nutrition and the dangers of performance-enhancing drugs to local area high schools. He is currently in the process of creating more lectures and seminars to help educate the youth. Michael's also been interviewed on the Mike Bonacorsi radio show. I'll have to ask Mike how to pronounce that later, as well as given a lecture for the Nashua Cancer Support Center. Michael's passionate about the sport of natural bodybuilding and works with many competitors each year, prepping them for their contests. You can see some of these top athletes on his website, fitwithmichael.com. Michael is also an avid physique competitor, and he's competed in more than a dozen contests. Welcome to the show today, Michael.
Thank you, Tom. Great talking to you again.
I am a big fan of bodybuilding, have been for a long time. I know the bodybuilding, not the one that you promote, because I'm one that likes the ones with the steroids, although I prefer if people not do it. You just heard my experience with steroids, and so I would join you in your escapade to teach the youth that, you know, that's not the proper way to go. Michael, you know, I almost always start my show, and because of our relationship, I know you have a great answer. When did you first read the book Think and Grow Rich, and who introduced you to Napoleon Hill?
Well, I first read the Think and Grow Rich on September 29th of 2009. Interesting. I actually had owned the book for quite some time. I'm an avid reader. I have hundreds and hundreds of books in both my home and office libraries. And I tend to buy in bulk, and it was one that I had bought in quite a bit before that time. And I happened to be in a local Barnes & Noble. I was looking for something specific, and I had come across the title, Think and Grow Rich. I'm like, you know, that title looks so familiar. So I opened it up, and I'm skimming through it, and I'm like, you know, I think I may have this in the collection. So I went back home. Sure enough, I did. And actually, I don't know, it was very strange. Something just pulled me, and I just had to drop everything else I was reading, and I read the book in about 3 or 4 days. And with my busy schedule, that's quite a feat. It usually takes me a couple weeks, if not a month, to read a book, because I usually have 6 or 7 going at a time. So I dropped everything else and just read it. And interestingly, it pulled at me, and I learned about the Napoleon Hill Foundation. I checked out naphill.org, and that was it for me. I became a member of the foundation, and I began the online course on October 26th, which, if I'm not mistaken, is Napoleon Hill's birthday. And,
yes.
And that was it. And then met you a year later.
Wow. So, like myself, you have hundreds and hundreds of books in your library, and so I guess we both know that leaders are readers. And so tell me a little bit about what the Napoleon Hill philosophy of success means to you personally.
You know, it's really helped me through. I've gone through perhaps the most challenging time of my life shortly before that. And, you know, I was kind of floundering, you know, just kind of not moving forward, not moving backward, just very stagnant, and it obviously didn't feel good. And so I had read many books, you know, of, you know, development, both personal as well as business, as well as physical, so on and so forth. And, you know, there's a lot of great pieces out there, a lot of great authors who put out a lot of wonderful material. But something about Napoleon Hill's philosophy just really connected with me more. It was more practical, more I'm not sure the word I'm looking for. It was more real to me. It didn't seem too steeped in the, you know, some of the stuff out there that you might read of take this potion, powder a pill, and all your problems are solved kind of thing. You know, I have to be mindful of that in my line of work, obviously. So it really pulled at me, and I just connected with it, and I was able to immediately start seeing where I was making many mistakes, and then as a result, start making the changes that I needed to get myself out of the rut that I was in.
Amazing, and I love what you said. Like, not thinking properly ahead of time of the word. A few interviews ago, I referred to some of these other philosophies as somewhat off the wall and crazy sometimes. And so, as you said. Napoleon Hill is time-tested, it's proven. He interviewed 500 of the wealthiest and most successful people of his time, and the principle still makes sense today. There's nothing in there that people are going to be scratching their heads at or wondering, what the heck does he mean by that?
And Lord knows I was looking for that. You know, I was trying to see, okay, let's see if this actually still does apply, because obviously Henry Ford, Carnegie, you know, J.P. Morgan, all these guys, you know, they're long gone. But, you know, what they did, yeah, it can still be applied today, and I do. You know, it's still a work in process. But, yeah, you'd be amazed if for me, I found what the biggest thing was, as I said, I have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of books and so on and so forth. But, you know, you can read all you want, and it's until you apply. And it's one of my actually favorite things that Napoleon Hill has is, you know, knowledge is not power. Knowledge is potential power. It becomes power when it's put to use. And that's what it ultimately came down to me with the Napoleon Hill philosophy, is putting that to use. And then I was starting to see the results that I wanted to.
Exactly. And it all depends on putting it to use in the end. And one thing we learned, or one thing Judy mentioned in the course that we took when we were in Ireland, that kind of really rings in my head often, is that Napoleon Hill's philosophy is the only one taught at 2 major universities in the U.S., University of Purdue and the University of Virginia at Wise. And they have offices on those campuses. The courses are taught as credit courses in those universities. And so none of these other speakers, authors, amazing people, the Zig Ziglars and Tony Robbins and Jim Rohns of the world, none of them has that prestige of having their course taught at two major universities in the U.S.
And that's what I think I was trying to steer clear, but since you brought them up, you know, I have all that material, and, you know, all kind of seems, you know, hoorah, everybody stand up and wave your hands in the air, and, you know, did you? Yeah, that's not for me, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that approach, but I'm a little bit more laid back when it comes to that type of thing. And so, you know, being able to take their courses and really feel that I was able to implement it immediately, it was huge. It definitely made a big difference for me.
Exactly. Now, Michael, I'm a big fan of weightlifting, weight training. I've been lifting weights, training with weights for probably 13 years now. And when I first started was after I had a fourth hip replace. And I did cardio as well, treadmill. When I first started, I could do 15 minutes at 1 mile an hour on a flat treadmill. And now I have six-pack abs, I work out regularly, and I really, really love weight training as well. I do a lot of talks for the Arthritis Society where we talk to people about working with weights. And, you know, sometimes people with arthritis would think, oh, I'm exempt from that. I'm already sore. It's going to make me more sore. No, actually, it builds your bones. It builds your ligaments and tendons, and it decreases pain. So can go through maybe some of the myths about weight training that people have and correct some of those myths for people, because I believe anybody, any age, even with chronic joint problems, should be weight training on a regular basis in a properly controlled fashion, of course.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about that. I mean, weight training reigns supreme as far as I'm concerned for anybody and everybody, regardless of age, gender, you know, goals or anything. It's just, it comes down to knowing what you need to do to achieve your, you know, your weight loss goals or, you know, your athletic competition goals. It's a very specific method to the madness. And one of the biggest myths out there that is usually found in my athletic field being physique competition, but really spreads across the entire environment of people who work out, is that they think lower reps and higher, lower weight and higher reps in order to build quote unquote definition. It's just not the case. It's just not the case. That's actually a great technique for those who are endurance athletes. I had one of my clients who I've been training now for 13 years and just helped her get ready for her 20th Boston Marathon. And, she is one, yes, who trains with very light weight and heavier repetition because she's working those endurance muscle fibers. What happens is when you're lifting heavier resistance, not only is it weight bearing, so you're getting the benefits of the bone density, especially important for females, but what's happening is you're also building muscle tissue. And when you build muscle tissue, you actually increase your metabolic rate. And when you increase your metabolic rate, you essentially are setting yourself up to become a fat burning machine at rest. Okay. And so a lot of people, specifically females, they're afraid to lift the heavier weights because I'm going to get big, I'm going to get bulky, and it's just not the case. You have to be lifting an exorbitant amount of weight, and you have to be eating an exorbitant amount of food for that to happen. So that's one of the biggest myths out there.
Now, one of them, you had mentioned a fat-burning machine, and that's something I talk about too, because you burn fat like for a lot longer after a weight workout than you do for a cardio workout. Do you know some figures on that?
Yeah, far superior. I mean, the you know, you'll read a lot of things out there in the textbooks or publications about after weight training. I'll do it the other way. After cardio, you're looking at just a couple hours of that metabolic effect after the fact. As where with weight training, you're looking at, you know, upwards of 24 hours plus. Now, you put, you know, back-to-back workouts together, assuming you're training your body parts appropriately. And, you're definitely one cog in the machine of becoming a fat-burning machine. Now, one little disclaimer I want to put out there is that when we're talking about weight training and getting the metabolic effect after the fact, we're not just talking about going into the gym and, well, I'm going to do this machine because I've seen it done before, or I'm going to go over here because, you know, I know these are my friends over here or something like that. No, you got to go in with a, you got to go in with a plan. You got to know what you're doing. It's got to be methodical. You want to get in, you want to train, and you want to get out. You know, myself, even when I'm getting ready for physique contest, I never train for more than an hour. But when I'm doing it, I'm doing it hard.
Yes. Well, and that's a good thing, because people think that to get this body requires, you know, to get in shape and get fit requires hours and hours of a workout. But it doesn't really. If you do it properly, combine some cardio and some weight training, you don't even have to spend an hour, do you?
Well, yeah, no, and that's just it. It just depends on the person. As a matter of fact, I have some clients who are half-hour clients of mine because it's very specific to their needs. I have a few senior citizens that I work with, one upwards of 80 years old, who they couldn't physically do any more than 30 minutes. And obviously, that's a little exaggeration in terms of course, they wouldn't be able to do an hour. But, you know, it really comes down to, in terms of the amount of time that you have to train, and even comes down to how much cardio you have to do, is really dependent on what your goals are. And that's really the first thing I can recommend to anybody, and that goes back to the Napoleon Hill philosophy: you have to set a goal. You got to know what you're doing, and you got to know how to get there.
Exactly. And one big thing that I would recommend, something I didn't do myself, but I really, really, really recommend personal trainers, especially when you're just starting. Because after 12 years at the gym now, I often see people who are obviously newbies and they're doing things wrong, and you know, you feel impolite going up to them and telling them they're doing it wrong, and yet you're kind of laughing inside your head when you see some of the ways people work out. And so it's so important, even if it's not a long-term commitment, but at least when you start out at a gym, so many different pieces of equipment, there's machines, there's free weights. Tell me, like, what can a personal trainer help people with at the start of their workout like that? Because I think if you just avoid a lot of those mistakes to start, you're going to probably continue on and have a better chance of success, right?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, it's like anything else. I mean, do we cut our own hair? No. I mean, we could, right? But would it come out properly? Probably not. Not unless you have a haircut like mine. You know, it's one of those things where when you're going into a personal trainer, usually people are seeing a personal trainer for two reasons, you know, that really are two umbrella reasons. The first umbrella would be, okay, I have a specific goal. You know, I want to compete in a physique contest, or I want to run a marathon, or I want to do the big thing now, the triathlons and the Ironman contest and so on and so forth. You know, so they're going to come in and they're going to work with a trainer who is knowledgeable in that area. You know, for example, I'm not going to necessarily train anybody who has the goal of being a triathlete, because that's not really my expertise. So that's really the first thing is, when you're looking at a personal trainer, do your homework. Make sure that just because they're a personal trainer, that doesn't necessarily assume that they know what they're doing when it comes to your specific goal.
Right.
And so when you do find that trainer and they go, again, it comes down to you can expect to know, okay, which exercises you need to be doing, how to do them properly, how many sets, reps, resistance, so on and so forth. But the real focus for me when I'm working with those types of clients is just, how are you doing the exercises, your technique, your form? Are you doing them correctly? And are you thinking progressively? You know, you're using X amount of weight now. A couple weeks from now, a month from now, you should not be using the same amount of resistance. The other umbrella are those folks who, it's funny, I have people come up to me all the time when I was had my office out of a major facility here in New Hampshire. And people, you've been training that person for 8 years. You've been training that person for 10 years. Don't they know everything that they need to? Well, my first response is, well, no, because I don't. You know, there's always new information coming out, new material coming out. I'm always educating myself and am able to give these people the new information coming out. Secondly, the main reason for those types of people is really simple. If they didn't have an appointment with me, they wouldn't get their workout done.
Yeah.
So it's so easy to go, especially this time of year, go off to the beach or go off to the amusement park, or just stay home and be lazy. So it's an accountability factor.
Exactly. One of my good friends in Ottawa, he's got a personal trainer, and exactly that reason you just said is that he knows the guy's expecting him. He's paid for it already, and so it really keeps him consistent and committed to going to the gym on a regular basis. And that's as worth as much as anything that they do in the gym for you can be at times, just to make sure that you get there. Because, my goodness, I love working out, and yet I often have to battle in my brain after work, like, oh, I'm too tired, I could go tomorrow, I need a rest.
I'm there, and it happens to me, so don't worry about it.
Exactly.
All, but, you know, it's about being a human being, and it's okay. You know, it doesn't mean you're weak. Willed or weak-minded or a failure or your goals aren't front. You know, it's just, you know, we're human, doing what we can, and we just, you know, it's good to have those professionals in place that can help us.
Right, and I thought of a couple of things when you were talking. One was where you said the right weight and the correct form. Where I see it funny sometimes, you kind of laugh in your head. Usually it's young guys too, like they're doing a dumbbell curl with a weight that takes their entire body weight, and they jiggle it and they wiggle it and they push it up, and like 90% of the work they're doing is not with their bicep at all. And when I joined a gym, I was self-conscious. I thought everybody was looking at this 5-pound weight I was using. But really, people don't care. They're there to encourage you more than anything, but they're not going home thinking, boy, that guy did 5-pound dumbbell weights. And then the correct form as well, to make sure that you do it properly with the proper weight, and then, as you said, gradually move it up. But when you first come to a gym and you're self-conscious, you see other people using specific weights, and you can really get off track trying to keep up. And I think a personal trainer is there not only to help you with the right weight and the right form, but just to take a little bit of the nerves away from being in a gym a first time, and maybe to encourage them that, don't worry, not everybody here is looking at you. Actually, nobody is looking at you.
Yeah. I mean, you're always getting, I don't know how it is up in Canada, but as far as the gyms here in America, you're always going to get a few knuckleheads in the gym, you know, these guys who think they're tough and, you know, they're big and bad, you know, and they just, they're in there for vanity purpose and not even the good kind of vanity. And, you know, yeah, they it's all show for them. But the way it is in the United States now, at least here in my region, New England, is that it's really about the private personal training studios now. You know, the big clubs, the box gyms, we call them, the franchises, they no longer have the independent personal trainers in there now. And so what happens is, it's hard for me when I'm working with my clients in my independents, when they go into the big box gyms to work out on their own, I'm always telling them out of the gate after we get done with their first couple workouts, they're going to go and attempt a workout. If they're not familiar with the movement, if they're not confident, you know, because it is brand new, the one thing that I'll tell them is, when in doubt, leave it out. You know, make a note, come back to me in your next appointment, we'll go over the workout, we'll go over the exercise and make sure that your form and your technique is where it needs to be so that you minimize the risk of injury or just being plain old counterproductive. But go ahead.
Yeah, and counterproductive and perhaps injuring yourself.
Oh, yeah, you don't need that. And, you know, and so it's just really one of those things that, you know, and it's funny, too, because I'll have clients who come back to me, you know, when they have their appointment with me, and they get so good and they get so knowledgeable about what they're doing, is that they get, oh, that person was doing this exercise wrong, or they were doing it this way, because they're learning and they're able to then implement, you know, the new technique, the proper technique into their own workout.
Mm-hmm.
So they can feel and see the difference.
Yeah, exactly. Now, let's talk about an area that, boy, I laugh sometimes because there's so much confusion with nutrition. For instance,
nutrition.
When I started years ago, I was kind of a follower, more of a follower than today, of Tony Robbins, so I read the book Fit for Life. Now, a bunch of years later, even Tony Robbins says that his advice about Fit for Life was wrong. And then you have all these various types of diets that all seem to contradict one another. And so tell me some of the nutrition myths that you hear, and straighten people out on those, and maybe give a few simple 3-4 suggestions that people who are working out and trying to get into better shape can follow.
Sure. The thing with nutrition is this. It's regardless of who you are, what your goals are, your age, gender, it does not matter. Nutrition is 80% of the success. 80%.
Yeah.
And it's so important. You gotta put so much focus and attention in your nutrition. However, once you know what you're doing, it really isn't that difficult. It's just a matter of doing it. And it's funny because I was talking to a client before our phone call today about a specific diet plan out there that, it's got some good foundation, but then it somewhat leads you astray because it really isn't what I call reality-based dieting. When I'm working with my clients on my Diet Doc program, I'm all about, teaching them how to live a healthy lifestyle. And what that means is if you feel as though you're dieting on my plan, on my program, then I'm not doing my job. Yes, there's got to be some discipline. There's got to be sacrifices. You can't eat the cheeseburgers and the pizza and all this all the time. It's learning about building that in. But when you're out there and you're saying, well, I'm not going to have any carbs in my diet, or I'm not going to have any complex carbs specifically, to me that's just a fool. You're heading down a wrong path there because carbohydrates are the body's primary source of energy. Now you got to be very careful about the types of carbohydrates that you consume. The ones that I recommend the most, and this is very basic, very just black and white advice right now, but the best ones that I consume, provided you're not allergic to them or have any other ill effect toward them, would be things like your sweet potato, your brown rice, and your oatmeal. Just very nice, for the most part, low glycemic carbohydrates. They'll keep your blood glucose levels in check, sustain you, provide you with the energy that you need to get through your day, to get through your workout, help you recover, help you repair. And when you don't have those present on some of these other low-carb or no-carb diet plans out there, you know what the funny thing is you're going to lose weight. There's no question. You're going to step on that scale, and the scale is going to show a lot, and that's great if that's what your focus is. But I'll tell you what right now, anytime I do a group lecture, I always start off with, when we come to the nutrition aspect of things, I always have folks raise their hands who I've known anybody who's been a part of those low-carb plans, and inevitably everyone raises their hand. And then keep your hands up if you or you know somebody who is still on those plans. And everyone will put those plans down, or put their hands down, because no, you can't sustain that. You cannot not consume carbohydrates. Again, it just comes back to knowing what types that you should be consuming, how much, what time of day, so on and so forth. The best advice I can give as it relates to nutrition, to keep it very simple, is one, make sure you have breakfast. Breakfast is, we've always heard from our mother and our grandmother, it's the most important meal of the day. It's what gets metabolism started. It gets the blood glucose to the brain, so on and so forth. But from that, then the next point I would tell you, you have to eat every 2 to 3 hours, 2 to 3, 4 hours, no more than 4 hours. When you eat every 2 to 4 hours, you have smaller meals. You're able to ensure that you keep your metabolism in check, you keep it rocking and rolling, and that you're not dipping too deep into your muscle tissue for energy because you haven't eaten. Next would be controlling the amount of food, the quality of food, so on and so forth, that you consume at each meal. You have to have a nice balance. Ideally, you want to have a nice protein and a nice carb at each and every meal, and usually with your fat, in some cases, you want to take in a direct fat source, but you'll find in a lot of cases with your animal protein that you'll get plenty of fat there, so you won't need to add any direct amounts.
Exactly.
That's really, yeah. I mean, and hopefully I won't get too deep into it, but you got to know how much you should be consuming each day in terms of what we call macronutrients, how many protein, carbs, and fats you should be consuming a day, and make sure you hit that number. So that's really basic soft advice for nutrition.
And it kind of ties into like Napoleon Hill, in that probably the best plan to follow is one that makes sense, one that's not wacky or crazy or not sustainable over a long period of time like some other success philosophies compared to Napoleon Hill's. And so even like, for instance, Atkins, which is kind of the reverse, like high protein, like those kind of diets are very hard to sustain throughout your life. And so the more something is common sense, makes sense, has variety, gives you the choice, those are probably the best diets to follow. Now, one thing, Michael, that I've been confused with, I'm sure lots of people confuse with over the years, is supplements. I've gone through periods where I spend $100 a month plus on different supplements. Then I say, that's a lot of money, and I say, I don't feel any different, and then I stop taking them. Is there ones that you recommend that your clients take? I guess every case is different, but are there some that more than others you recommend that others take? And are there maybe some ones that probably aren't that good to, they're not that necessary to take?
Yeah, I mean, without getting into too many specifics as far as brand names or anything like that, I can definitely give some recommendations. I mean, like nutrition, it does come back to customization. You know, you have to set up your nutrition plan according to who you are and what your goals are. Same thing with your supplementation. Now, the interesting thing that people forget about supplementation is just that. What is the meaning of the word? To supplement, not in place of. I've known many people over the years who have spent, you talk about $100, they'll spend hundreds of dollars on supplements, and they look the exact same, if not worse, because they're taking this, that, and the other thing that really what's causing them to do is gain weight and not the good kind of weight. So with the supplements, what I do is I always recommend a multivitamin to my clients. You got to make sure that you're getting all the nutrients in your body that it needs. And obviously with the way, you know, some of our foods are made today, we just can't get all those nutrients in. And a lot of times, too, folks with busy schedules, you know, the lack of planning and prep, they don't get all the meals in that they should. So, you know, at the very minimum, it at least is helping to get those nutrients in. The next would be a good protein powder. If you are one who is not opposed to protein powders, anytime I'm working with my diet doc clients, I always recommend a good protein powder, but I never require it. Some folks just aren't, they don't like the supplements, and that's okay. It's not for everybody. But I do a nice meal replacement for my after-workout meal. It's quick nutrition that will get into my body, help to repair my muscle tissue immediately without taking the time to digest and break down solid food. Also taking another type of protein, a whey or a casein protein that is very slow digesting protein. I'll do that before bed. And again, that helps you keep the muscle tissue growing and doesn't cause me to go into that while I sleep. Again, very slow to digest, unlike some of the other proteins out there. I also recommend those for those who work out very hard for the recovery process, a glutamine and a branched chain amino acid. Again, both great in helping with recovery. And so on and so forth. I take creatine as well as arginine, which again helps with me with my workout while I'm training. Just helps with the strength and it helps with the recovery. It gives me a little bit more boost too during my workout, so that I can maintain the relatively heavily loads that I lift. That's pretty much it. You know, a lot of people get into all these other testosterone enhancers and even the quote unquote legalized ones, and for me, it's just not out there. Fat burners, another big one. Interestingly, there's no such thing as a fat burner. What the fat burners do is just caffeine on steroids, if you will. And what they do is they help, you know, burn. They help you know, give you a little bit more pep in your workout. They give you that energy you need to push a little bit harder, a little bit longer in your workout. And you know, that's pretty much it. You know, and again, you can take these fat burners and you'll get the effects that you want. But what's going to happen is that only happens is if you're following the proper nutrition plan.
Right, right. And you had mentioned creatine. I've taken that a few times in the past. And, boy, I can generally pump about 5 or 10 pounds more per side or per arm or per whatever. And I feel amazing. I feel better than when I don't take it. I've had experiences where I didn't take it. Yeah, cyclid, exactly. And you want to make sure you do it properly. I've had times where it upset my my stomach. And so you may want to make sure you take it properly, and there's different suggestions on how to take it. But I know when I use it, I could lift more weight, and I always put a few pounds on.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Good pounds.
That's the purpose. I have an old training partner of mine who was taking creatine. We got her on a good program with the nutrition, and she was leg pressing 900 pounds. I'll have to send you the YouTube video of that. It's pretty cool. She thought she was going to try to keep up with me, but I couldn't let that happen. So it is a great product. It's safe. It's relatively inexpensive, and I highly recommend it.
Wow. Now, earlier you were mentioning oatmeal as a great food, and boy, when I used to read bodybuilding magazines, I think every bodybuilder starts their day with oatmeal. What is so good about oatmeal?
I have it three times a day. It's fantastic. It's just a very good high-quality complex carbohydrate that, again, isn't going to give you that blood sugar rise, the insulin spike, you know, so on and so forth. Because what happens is, it visualize, you know, if you give your children, you know, candy, what do? They're bouncing off the walls. And then what happens? They fall into a coma. You know, and that's what happens to people. That's why you're getting these low-carb diets out there, because that's what they're dispensing out there in terms of the reason for doing their diet. And they're not wrong. It is correct. That's what's going on. But that's why it's so important to make sure that when you're consuming those carbohydrates, that you're doing so, what I call being a check with it. You're making sure that you're consuming the appropriate amount. I consume about 50 grams of carbohydrate worth of oatmeal in the morning. I would never have, you know, one of my clients, for example, my girlfriend, you know, she's a competitor as well. She only consumes about 25 grams of carbohydrate worth of oatmeal in the morning. Because, again, it's just very low glycemic. It sustains you, and it's very clean in terms of that it's very low in fat. It has a reasonable amount of protein in it, and if prepared properly, it can taste good too. And I'm saying that with a smile.
Yeah, exactly. If you add some berries and a few other things, it can be really, really good. On its own, it can be dry and boring if you take it every day.
Exactly.
But you can certainly spice it up. Now, Michael, when I first joined gym years ago, I joined a Gold's Gym in Mississauga, right next to Toronto, and one of the owners of the gym was Henderson Thorne, an IFBB pro. He competed against Arnold on stage for Olympias and a few other events, and so I got to see a little bit of contest prep work that he did when he would be getting ready for a contest. He would be working out at the gym, and got to speak with him, and diet changes, fluid intakes change, the type of workout change. So give me kind of an overview of physique contest prep that bodybuilders go through to get into the shape that they are on that show day. Because a lot of times also I'm thinking in the back of my mind, a lot of people will maybe look at a bodybuilder on competition day and they'll say, well, I don't know that I want to look like that. However, you have to remember they only look like that on competition day.
Yeah, and we call that peaking. And you won't see a bodybuilder looking like that. You know, after that fact, you know, and I'll always have folks come up to me where they'll talk about me or they'll talk about my clients who are preparing for contests. It'll be 2 or 3 weeks out, or heck, even a week out. And, you know, they'll say, hey, you ready for your contest? And I'll say, I hope not, because if I'm ready for my contest then I'm peaking too early and I'm going to lose what I have. It's a science and it's trick. You remember earlier in today's show that I was talking about any of my what we call Gen Pop, general population clients, those who are not athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Feel as though they're dieting, that I'm not doing my job. You know, I don't want them to feel as though they're dieting. For my competitors, we are dieting. There is no question about it. We are dieting. It is strict. It is brutal. But what I mean by brutal is that we're eating a lot of food. We actually usually eat more than most people. You know, a lot of those who are not, you know, hip to the game, that, you know, we're starving ourselves, or, you know, so on and so forth. No, we're not starving ourselves. We eat a ton of food. The problem is we're depriving ourselves of pizza, of cheeseburgers, of, you know, whatever your, you know, junk food of choice is. And,
yes,
you know, you can do that for upwards of 10 to 16 weeks, depending on what kind of shape you're in. And so, yeah, imagine going that long without having, you know, that type of food and that you might enjoy from time to time, what we call little splurge. So what you have to do is you have to make sure that usually there's going to be a deficit in caloric consumption to get ready for competition. And what that's doing is allowing our body to not rely so much on the carbohydrates as energy, which they still will, but it's going to be far less. And so what happens is we're then able to tap into our stored fat as energy, and thus we lose body fat, and that's when you start to see the definition. The way we train will be much quicker paced, much faster paced. We'll still lift if done correctly, we'll still lift as heavy as possible, lifting the most amount of resistance we can. We'll still keep the reps what I call small. I never exceed 12 repetitions in a workout. And I'll do a lot more what's called supersetting, where I'll do one exercise immediately followed by another exercise without any rest, as to where – in what we call off-season training or preseason training, we might do a set of squats. Let's say we'll take 90 seconds before we do the second set. In pre-contest training, we'll do a set of squats and then maybe immediately into lying leg curls for the hamstrings with no rest in between. And the appropriate amount of aerobic activity. You know, my objective for my competitors when they're prepping for a competition, and you can see some great pictures on my website. I had a couple girls compete just this earlier last month. I want my clients to eat the most amount of food possible, do the least amount of cardio possible, and still lose body fat. And there's a trick. It's different for everybody. You know, I'll have some clients who might do 3 or 4 days of cardio. I'll have some who do 6 or 7. And I'll have some who do maybe 1. You know, and it just really is dependent on that person. That's what customization is all about.
Right. And then I think as you get more experience, you get to learn your own body better too as well, I think, because I've read a lot of bodybuilding things, and on the day of competition, oftentimes a bodybuilder will lose because of that specific exact day. They are not showing at their 100% best or what they look like maybe the day before, few days before. And, you know, you'll even hear or see writers write, you know, before the competition, they were expected to win, but on game day, on show day, turned out a little flat. And so really quite a science behind it. And you have to make it a science to the exact day and hour you're working out and training at the show, right?
Yeah, which will see a lot of people, and it's what I call a very old-school style of approach to competition. It's still done out there, and God bless, you know, if that's what you think works for you. You know, who am I to say don't? The only time I would is if somebody came to me specifically and wanted me to prep them. But one of the big I got to be careful saying this, I suppose, because of what I just said, but one of the biggest misconceptions out there is that we're going to deplete water. We're going to cut back water the week of. No, actually, I'll have my clients drink the water all the way through, and by manipulation of the carbohydrate, they'll also do the carb depletion. Quite the opposite. What we do is we actually increase. It's what we call eating into a contest. And so actually, a week before, have my clients, in some cases, eat anywhere from 75 to 100 grams worth of carbohydrate more than what their baseline was leading up to that point, and then from there decreasing down to what their baseline was, and that would be carb depleting. Instead of, so say, for just easy numbers, somebody was consuming 100 grams, instead of going 100 grams down to 75, down to 50, down to 25, you know, each day preceding the competition, we would start very high and come back down to what their base is and keep the water high, and as a result, that manipulation helps to pull the water into the muscle tissue and just gives you a much fuller look so that you don't go into contest day looking flat and, you know, deflated and so on and so forth. But it's a trick, because if it's done too much, you can then spill over and you just look washed out.
Amazing. Michael, I'll give you 2 minutes here to end the show, maybe talk about what you're doing in coming months, a little bit maybe how people can contact you, how you can help them with their contest preparation, or even just if they're just wanting to get in better shape.
Yeah, what I'm doing right now is as I said, as you said earlier in the bios, I'm actually working toward, I'm in phase one of my master certified personal training. It's not a master's program such as a university, but through the ISSA, I'm working at my master status certified personal training certification. So I'm just finishing up phase one. So that's really taking up a lot of my time right now. I'm also focusing more in on, as this is competition season, I have quite a few clients that I'm working with. We have quite a few shows this year that we're preparing for. And I've actually played with the idea of getting myself back in there on stage again. But with the amount of clients that I'm working with, I just don't have the time to commit to it right now. So it's really just developing my business, growing it. You know, again, going back to the Napoleon Hill philosophy, I'm implementing those every day, establishing my goals there, and just working the plan and so on and so forth. But for those who have questions or they'd like to see what the Diet Talk program is all about, they can contact me on my website, www.fitwithmichael.com. That's FITWIEHMICHAEL.com. There's some great testimonials on there, before and after pictures of both general population clients as well as physique competitors, for those of you who might be into that. And if you just like to chat, you know, feel free to contact me.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time today, Michael. Great topic, some great information there, and on some things that people are often confused about with weightlifting and nutrition and that. So thank you so much for joining us, and have yourself an amazing day.
Thanks for having me, Tom. I'll talk to you later.
Take care.